So I'm going to be speaking of different pastimes, both personal pastimes of my own experience and those of other God sisters. Specifically speaking on interactions with Srila Prabhupada and his daughters. Now, before I start speaking about his divine grace, I'd like to set a little mood, because it's never my intention actually to just tell a few charming stories or funny stories or amusing stories. Rather, in invoking these pastimes and these memories, there is some hope that all of you may become more appreciative of Srila Prabhupada the person, how he responded to different situations, and how he treated all of his devotees, and find some point of identification where you feel yourself becoming closer to Srila Prabhupada. I'd like to also remind devotees to keep in mind that even though there are many unlimited, wonderful, great Vaishnavas, sadhus, saintly devotees, Srila Prabhupada alone stands unique in our disciplic succession. And that is very easily explained, because Srila Prabhupada did something that no other previous acharya, our current acharya, has ever done. And that is that he actually took the mantle, he took the torch of Lord Chaitanya, and he brought it forward into the modern world. And he spread the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, all over the world. Now, it is well known that Lord Chaitanya had said his name would be chanted in every town and village. But people of small minds thought, yeah, every town and village in West Bengal, maybe East Bengal, maybe in Orissa, or maybe, the more broad-minded people, maybe all over India. But it was actually the real seekers of the truth, like Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who actually understood when Lord Chaitanya said all over the world, every town and every village, he meant exactly that. And we could say, actually, we only know this little world that we're on. It's a little world. And there's a lot more little worlds out there, even though our scientists haven't been able to figure that out yet. We know from our scriptures that there's unlimited worlds out there. So that means Lord Chaitanya's name will be unlimitedly spread. And we can take part in that at any time, on any occasion. But Srila Prabhupada was able to effect this. And how did he do this? First of all, one must be qualified. Qualification, it explains in Sesta Nishitamitra, was that anyone who wants to spread the Sankirtan movement successfully must be empowered by the Supreme Lord. So many people are preaching and banging drums and hari bowling, but it doesn't go too far. Srila Prabhupada, however, because he was coming in the mood of a humble servant, in fact, he would often say, I have no disciples, I am simply their servant, meaning referring to us as disciples. I am simply the servant. But he came in that mood, servant of the servant. And he said, if I have done anything wonderful, it is that I have simply followed the instructions of my spiritual master, and I have not changed anything. So that in itself is a very deep lesson for us to learn. And he repeated this in many different occasions, so it wasn't a random remark. And we can see that the success of the Sankirtan movement depends completely upon this ability to be able to strictly follow the mood and the teachings of our preceptor, Srila Prabhupada. The current gurus are successful because they are maintaining their allegiance and loyalty to Srila Prabhupada, just as Srila Prabhupada maintained his allegiance and loyalty to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And this is a lesson that we learn also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that we heard from Dhruva Maharaj, who said that I was falling into a deep, dark well full of snakes, and my spiritual master instructed me in the art of transcendence. So therefore, how could I ever leave his servants? So Srila Prabhupada also appreciated and was grateful and demonstrated that gratitude to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta by following his instructions and never leaving his service. And he gave us a very profound instruction in that regards in 1967, when there was a point when he was very ill, and he had determined that he would return to India to regain his health. He said, I will go home to Vrindavan. So in the Ayurvedic tradition, it is even mentioned that if one is ill, one is more easily recovered if they go home. Go to your native place, because there you're familiar with the climate, the sounds, the smells, the food, everything is familiar to you, so you can more easily relax and rest, and that makes it easier to recover. So he said, I'm going home to Vrindavan to recover. However, he also added, I am an old man, I may die at any time. Therefore, I want you boys and girls to push on this movement. So we were simply stunned when we heard those words, because in the first place, even though we understood he was, by mathematics, an old man, in reality, he never appeared or acted like what we had experienced old men to behave like or to look like. So we didn't consider him an old man at all. And when he said we might die at any time, it wasn't something we had not heard about, because every day we heard, you know, there's the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and then there's the other mantra, birth, death, disease, and old age. So, you know, we'd heard about this death part. But it was still very theoretical. It was, you know, in a book somewhere, or out the door somewhere, or in another town and village, but it hadn't hit us yet. But when he said that, he was an old man, he may die at any time, we were feeling very stunned. And then he said, I want you boys and girls to push on this movement. So, practically speaking, the oldest person in the room at that point, besides Srila Prabhupada, was maybe 27 years old. So we really were boys and girls. In reading through different interviews I've done with my god sisters on their memories of Srila Prabhupada, it's not uncommon to hear that I first met Srila Prabhupada when I was 14 or 15. I joined when I was 15 or 16. You know, we were very young people. So, you know, pushing on a movement, we hardly realized we were in a movement. This was San Francisco 67. There was two temples, one in New York, a little room on 2nd Avenue, and then our little San Francisco sister temple on Frederick Street. And, you know, if you counted us all together, the sum total at that point was not reach 50. We were really, you know, sometimes we talk about how packed the temple would be. And, I mean, of course they would get packed, but they were small rooms also. I mean, you know, we didn't have these palatial mansions like we do now. Now when you go to Krishna Balaram Mandir for Dhammadharashtakam and you say the temple's packed, you know, it means what it means. You can't get in the door, you know, a few thousand people. So, you know, we weren't thinking in a very intimate way, Swamiji and us. You know, we weren't thinking broadly about a movement. So suddenly, you know, we were thinking, from day one he was telling us, go out and preach. And of course, okay, what do we say, what do we do? Well, you just listen to me and then you speak what you've heard from me, don't add, don't subtract, and, you know, everything will be all right. And that's what we were doing. But his presence empowered us. Just even if he was in New York and we were in San Francisco, knowing he was there, we were very empowered. And we could speak boldly with conviction, even if we knew very little. But because of his presence, we were not shy to present Krishna consciousness. So to hear him request us to push on a movement, and suddenly realize he's saying that because maybe he'll die, maybe he won't come back. It was very shocking to us. How could we do this? How would we be able to push on a movement when we actually didn't even know anything? So one of the devotees made a request, and the request was based upon his request. His request was to push on the movement. So the request was coming from the thought, we don't know very much, how are we going to push on this movement? Now we knew that before he came to India and after he'd arrived in America, he had requested godbrothers of his to come and assist in the preaching. You can see these letters, you know, please come. People here, they don't know anything about Radha and Krishna. You can just preach. Don't worry about finances. I'll take everything. You know, I'll take care of everything. There's so many people. They're suffering because they're in ignorance. People just, you know, well, I don't think so. I can't leave Vrindavan. I can't leave India. No, thank you. Nobody came forward. So Prabhupada could understand that, you know, certain mentality was there. And when he had little success, those two little storefronts, and started making Western disciples, then there was talk, and it filtered back to him there, oh, Bhaktivedanta Swami left India, and now he's got the Malecha Westerners. Oh, what is happening? You know. So when we asked, could we invite one of your godbrothers to come and teach us in your absence? It wasn't to replace him, but it was so we thought that we would better be able to assist him. But when that question was uttered, he was sitting, we didn't have Vyasa signs in those days. We just had a little platform. It was about this high off the ground, and there was a cushion on it that we had picked off the street from a discarded sofa. And he was sitting on this little, we called it the dais. And when he heard the question, he became very still, and his back was very erect. And he was just very still and very silent. And we noticed this, and we also became very still and very silent. I remember just fixating my eyes on his face. I wasn't sure if he was breathing even, you know, just to see, was his nose. We had heard about, you can tell if a person is in their body, you take some cotton and put it under the nose, or you watch the nose quiver. So I was just looking. Everybody was looking and quiet. And then he spoke, and he said in a very low, deep voice, my spiritual master was not an ordinary man. He saved me. And he paused. He said, if even one person comes and changes even one word of what I have taught you, the whole thing will be spoiled. Everything I have to teach you is in these books. And by these books, he was talking about, we only had the first volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam at that point. It was in three books. So that was it. We didn't have Bhagavad Gita yet. We didn't have any Srisupanishad, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. None of that was there. But he told us everything is in these books. And not everybody even had a copy because there were so few of them. But when he said that, it penetrated our hearts. And we also understood that our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, was not an ordinary person, that he had saved us. And when somebody saves you, there is a debt of gratitude to be repaid. So sometimes people look at Guru Dakshin, you get initiated, you go around and ask for some money, you know, throw it at your guru. Offer it to your guru. But the real Guru Dakshin is that you follow the instructions of your spiritual master. This is the reality of Guru Dakshin. So Srila Prabhupada, he was offering unlimited Dakshin to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. And by his example, we also desired to offer unlimited Dakshin to his lotus feet. So, I will speak. Also, the other day I read something very nice. It was in 1966 in New York City, very early on. And Srila Prabhupada was describing a saintly person. So, we had just learned saintly person is sadhu. You know, so, Srila Prabhupada said, the sadhu, they take the risk of becoming friendly and merciful to the fallen conditioned souls. And they preach the message of Godhead. Therefore, their mercy is required. They are merciful by nature. One who is sadhu, one who is a devotee, he has developed that merciful quality, that friendly quality. So their business is to enlighten those who are ignorant, those who are fully absorbed in this material concept of life. Therefore, the sadhus preach. So, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, ISKCON, it's a preaching mission. It's meant to enlighten, to give spiritual knowledge to those who are in ignorance of the spiritual life, to those who are fully absorbed in the concept of material sense gratification. It's our duty to preach, not our duty to simply, you know, be comfortable. So, and Srila Prabhupada said, so the sadhus take risk. So who has taken a greater risk than Srila Prabhupada than getting on that Jaladuta, that freighter, at the age of almost 70, just a few days short of being 70, walking up the gangplank with his little suitcase in his hand to cross the ocean. You know, just recently this summer, I went on a transcendental cruise with about 220 or 30 devotees. Radhanath Maharaj was there, Bhakti Tru Maharaj, Satchidananda Maharaj, Chandramali Maharaj, and Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj, Yadubar, myself, so many devotees, mostly from England, but also from South Africa and USA. And we went to a few different ports of call, you know, so we'd stop and all the other passengers would get out and go shopping, and we'd get out and do Harinam Sankirtan. So in our first stop was in Amuden. Amuden is in Holland. And then we took a bus into Amsterdam. And the previous day had been the Rath Yatra. So many devotees were still there. So the devotees, accompanied by Lokanath Maharaj and others, came to meet us in Amsterdam. And we had a grand Harinam, over 300 devotees. It was historic for that place. And very well received. And then we were on to the next port of call. We went to Guernsey, which is a little island, and near France. It's a British island, but it's near France. Then we went to Santiago, which is actually place of pilgrimage for the Christians. It's where the body of Saint Peter, also known as Santiago, is interred. And the Harinam there was met with the mayor of the town, several other officials, radio stations, and television stations, newspapers. And we went for 3 hours Harinam, and they were just really embracing people coming out. It's like we were going in the old part of town with the narrow little streets and, you know, the cute little shops, and people were just coming out and waving, and we were waving back, and, you know, and then they would go like this. Everybody was so friendly and so happy because they saw the devotees were happy and that the devotees were trying to make them happy too by calling them and waving at them, and, you know, a few people had books. But it was such a wonderful thing. So, you know, if Srila Prabhupada hadn't gotten on that little boat, because I say little boat because this ship that we were on, oh my God, it was so gigantic. I mean, it was bigger than the temple room. You know, the whole, I mean, I'm talking not just the temple room, but the whole courtyard and the rest of it. Maybe like 3 or 4 times bigger. Gigantic. And there was, you know, so much facility for sense enjoyment on that boat. They had gambling casinos, and they had multiple bars and discos and this and that. And then for us, it was totally irrelevant. Because we were doing our morning program while they were all passed out from the night before, we were up chanting and having our morning program. And they let us use this one theater area. And then in the evening, we would go into the disco, because their discos didn't start till 11 o'clock at night. So before that, we would go in and have our katha and our kirtans and dancing and chanting. So then, you know, as I say, we'd go to these different ports. We went to 2 places in Spain. We went to France. And they'd get off and, you know, go shopping, and we'd be Hare Krishna in the, you know, every town and village. So it was really wonderful. Srila Prabhupada got on a boat that wasn't that big. It was a freighter. And I can tell you, I saw it one time. And when I went to see it, it was just about to be dismantled. So I went to the shipyard in Bombay. And I'm looking, you know, like, because there was all these huge, huge ships there. So I'm trying to find which one's the Jaladuta. And I lowered my vision, and there was like this little tiny toy with Jaladuta written on the side. You know, I was like, God, that's what he went over the ocean in. It was like unbelievable. You know, he took a risk. He took a risk with his own life to bring Krishna consciousness to all of us. So this is the nature of a sadhu, that to take a risk to give Krishna consciousness. And no one took a bigger or a greater risk than Srila Prabhupada, going into this unknown terrain of the Western world. So, I mean, just imagine, like now you can't even... I mean, right, sometimes I feel like I'm in New York City here in Vrindavan with all the noise. I mean, it's quieter in New York City because nobody's out on the street, and you're not allowed to honk your horns in New York City, you know. And they have stoplights and traffic lights, so there's some kind of order to all the traffic. But here, just to cross Parikrama Marg, to walk over here, it's like take your life in your hands, you know, and those screeching horns and... It's amazing. But at that time when Prabhupada was here, it was so quiet and peaceful. And when he brought us here in 1970, it was still, they didn't have the boom boxes, people didn't have cars, you know, just few little rickshaws and the, you know, the cows and the peacocks. And it was so peaceful and quiet. And you could go to the Yamuna and actually drink the water without even worrying about it. You know, can you imagine that today? You take... yeah, unfortunately, you just have to put the water in your head. And anyway, you know, so Prabhupada left this beautiful atmosphere that was really geared towards spiritual life. There weren't any garish billboards with half-dressed people saying, buy a flat in Vrindavan and enjoy, you know. I mean, it was nothing like that. It was just so unimaginably serene. And the only sounds were little bells coming from the temples, or maybe a gong or a mridanga, you know, and chanting. That's all you heard. And he left all that to come to the West because he knew people were suffering for lack of Krishna consciousness. Anyway, we'll speak of a little bit about some of his wonderful qualities, one being his compassionate nature, his compassionate, friendly nature towards all. I'm not going in any particular order. It's a little random, but these are some of my own personal experiences here. In San Francisco, we were the second center. And quickly there was an attraction by the young people who were in the area because it was the dawn of the hippie era. And so there was just young people who were just leaving their homes and their families and going like a magnet to San Francisco in the hopes of finding something, in the hopes of finding something more than they had experienced in their lives and at their own homes and in the schools. People would just walk out of school. I was in a university. And one day I just thought, what is this? I hadn't met Prabhupada yet, but I just thought, what is this for? I don't want to be like these people. If I go to this school, I'm going to be like these people. I don't want to be like these people. I could see they weren't happy. It wasn't what I had in mind for myself. So I just put my books down on a bench and walked away. I never even told them I wasn't coming back. I just left my books on a bench and walked out. And I never regretted it. I'm not telling people to do that, but I'm just saying for me it was not any decision that was negative in my life. So many people like that, though, were there. And many bad habits, nasty habits, uncultured habits, you know, searching for the truth but without a clue where and how to find it. So a lot of drug taking, because there was a wide-held belief that by taking these certain types of drugs, it would, you know, help, it would like loosen your consciousness and you could see beyond and you could see things that you normally couldn't see, which was true, but what you were seeing was a hallucination, which, and you weren't, you know, identifying with anything of any real substance. So this was, by and large, the first people that were coming to Srila Prabhupada. And how kind he was to us, how compassionate, how non-judgmental. And one devotee came, not everybody was like that, but I would say at least 80%, 75 to 80%. So one of the 20 to 25% who wasn't like that was this one young boy who came. He was maybe 19. And he quickly started, you know, following. And he had a younger sister. And the younger sister found his Bhagavad Gita. And she read that book. And she was also feeling interested, because she had a very miserable situation. When her mother was pregnant with this girl, her mother didn't want the girl. She didn't want the baby. She didn't know what it was, boy or girl, but she didn't want it. So to her credit, she didn't get an abortion. But after she had the baby, she walked out of the hospital, leaving the baby behind. So, you know, not a very glorious beginning. Somehow, you know, was reunited with the mother. But the mother didn't care for her, and she'd keep her home from school sometimes and force her to go out and shoplift. I mean, steal from the shops. And, you know, so now this girl, she's read Bhagavad Gita, she realizes her miserable life is not, you know, there is something more than life. So she visited the temple a few times, but she was under the mother's control. And the brother was feeling like he would like to help her, but he didn't know what to do. So he went to Srila Prabhupada, and he explained briefly the situation. And Srila Prabhupada looked out, and he looked at me and my husband. So I was, at that point, barely... I had just turned 21 in... So I was still 21, you know, not very old. Just about to turn 22. My husband, 3.5 years older. This girl was 16. So Srila Prabhupada looks around and says, well, maybe Malati and Shyamasundar can adopt her. So, you know, how reasonable does that sound to anybody? You know, like, she's somebody else's child, she's 16, we're not quite 22 and 25, adopt her. But we didn't think that, yeah, she was deaf, but she could read lips. She was really good at reading lips. She would sit across the room and tell me what all the brahmacharis were saying. In fact, sometimes, you know, when others couldn't understand Prabhupada's accent, but she could read the lips, she could understand very clearly. Anyway, that didn't stop us. You know, we didn't even think of, you know, these so-called obstacles or that there would be any impediment. Immediately, yes, okay, we'll do this. I went to the courthouse and I found out what you'd have to do to get somebody away from their natural parent. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. In America, they give the parent, the natural parent, a lot of, you know, rights. It's not easy to take the child away. And usually if that happens, they'll try to find somebody else in the family. But who am I? I had no relationship at all. And I'm barely 22 years old. Nonetheless, we marched ahead. And we got to the point we had to have a hearing before a judge. So I'm there with Shyamasundar. Saradhya wasn't there because this was between the mother and, you know, the court system and myself. So judge listened to both sides, made the deliberation, and it was a lady. She goes, all right. She says, well, this may be a little unusual. The mother's 22 and the daughter's 16, so going on 17, but I'm awarding custody to this, and they gave the custody to us, myself and my husband. So Srila Prabhupada was so caring for his daughters. And then with this girl, she was thinking, now, you know, she'll be living with Malati and Shyamasundar. She won't have to go to school. She can be with all the devotees all day long. And Prabhupada said to her, so, you have finished school? She said, no. She goes, then you must finish school. So her face kind of... The thing was, because her mother had kept her out of school, so she had missed so many days of school, her grades were very bad. And she'd been bounced out of many schools. So I had to go to this... There was a school by the temple, one block away. I went to that school in my sari and tilak, and I... have this girl, I want to put her in the, you know, it's now she's my foster daughter and I want to put her in school. So they look at the record and they go, you know, no. I said, just give her one chance. It's going to be different this time. So that somehow the principal agreed and she went to school every day, tilak, sari, and her grades, which had been at the best a D. In America, we have, you know, it's A, B, C, D, F. So A is the top grade. D is like just below failing, and F is failing. So her grades were D's and F's. Suddenly, her grades are like B's and A's. She was doing very well. But still, she didn't want to be in school. She wanted to spend the day with the devotees. So Srila Prabhupada was coming for a visit. And she thought of something that she could tell him, and she was sure if she told him this thing that he would say to her, oh, that's terrible, now you mustn't go to school. So she raises her hand and she goes, you know, she tells him, Swamiji, the boys are bothering me. Because she was beautiful, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, she was so beautiful. The boys are bothering me. And he goes, oh, yes, they want to come and see me. And he goes, oh, yes, you know, she thought she really had, you know, she had a sympathy here. He goes, that's all right. When they ask for your address, you give them the address of the temple. And when they come to see you, they'll see Krishna. Because at that point we had Lord Jagannath. So that was her last effort at not going to school. On another occasion, it was actually during that same visit, she was asking wonderful questions, and Prabhupada was very pleased with her. At one point he stopped and he said, just see this young girl. You know, just see how much she loves Krishna. And he looks at her and he goes, if you like, Krishna will kiss you. One other girl, because, you know, most people in that city, you know, who would come were one way or another coming from some kind of suffering. So one girl came and she was listening to Srila Prabhupada speak. And her heart was melting. He was just giving so much mercy. And she was feeling just overwhelmed by his presence. So after the class, she raised her hand and goes, Swamiji, will you marry me? He was kind of like, he goes, oh, I can't, I'm a sannyasi. You know, like, you know, he was very sweet to her. Of course, she didn't quite know what a sannyasi was. Somebody had to explain to her. But and then one other time, I brought a person. Because, you know, when you first join, you're thinking, wow, this is so wonderful. You know, and you want to tell all your friends and your family and, you know, bring them also to get this wonderful knowledge. So I had one friend who was a very promiscuous young lady. And she was constantly miserable. And I thought, wow, this is just what she needs. And I just know she'll be so happy to find this relief. So I brought her to the temple, and she listened to Srila Prabhupada speaking, and he was mentioning the four regulative principles. So after the class, she raises her hand when he asked her questions, and she didn't have a question. She made a statement. She goes, well, Swamiji, when I have sex, I think I have, you know, I achieve God. I have union with God. So Srila Prabhupada, in a very kind way, explained to her this really wasn't happening like that, and it wasn't possible that way. But she couldn't hear it. She goes, no, for me, when I have sex, I'm with God. One more time, he gave her very kind words on how this wasn't the way it worked. And for the third time, she goes, for me, sex is God. So Srila Prabhupada just looked at her. You know, he wasn't angry. He wasn't disgusted. He was so full of compassion. And he said, I have only brought one medicine. Please take it. And he picked up the kartals and he began a kirtan. He could understand that she had no capacity. She was so covered over. But at least take this medicine. And he began a kirtan. Srila Prabhupada, we could see, you know, this perfect person. And that sometimes, you know, as hippies, we had given up a certain lifestyle. But it didn't mean that we had no material desires. We just were trading lifestyles, you know. Rearranging the furniture in the room, you can say. You know, you have this room. This room, I've seen it being so many different. You know, Prabhupada used to be there, and there was, you know, different arrangement. But still, the four walls and the books, and, you know, it's the same room. So, anyway, we can see Srila Prabhupada, no material desires, no material hankering. And as simple things, you know, like, he would get a letter and he'd very carefully open the envelope, and then he would open it up even further, take out the letter and then open up on all sides and fold it over, and then he'd use the back side of the envelope to take notes on. You know, didn't just toss it, you know, like everything was used very meticulously, very carefully. And one time in a walk, this was in the UK, you know, on a walk in the neighborhood, in one neighborhood, you know, where there were houses, and he noticed, nobody else notices, that there was a faucet dripping, an outdoor faucet, leaking water. And he walked on these people's property and went up and turned off the faucet, you know. You know, just, One other time at the manor, some girls were cleaning his room when he went out for his walk. And they'd opened the window to get in some fresh air, but they hadn't turned the heat off. So Srila Prabhupada came back a little earlier than expected. Had he come back a little later, the window would have been closed. But he came back a little earlier, so he comes in the room and he looks and he sees the heat's on and the window's open. He goes, "Oh, your father must be a very wealthy man," because the heat was going out the window. No. Sometimes in the Hare Krishna movement there is tension, we can say, between men and women, you know, the place of women, the place of men, blah blah. Anyway, on September 24th, 1968, during a conversation, Srila Prabhupada gave some, things were already, you know, starting in that way. So Srila Prabhupada gave very nice instruction, so I request all you gentlemen to hear very nicely, and ladies too, of course. He said, "Now, another thing, that girls should not be taken as inferior. You see, sometimes, of course, scriptures say women is cause of bondage. That should not be aggravation that woman is inferior, or something like that. So the girls who come, you should treat them nicely. After all, anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness, man or woman, boys or girls, they are welcome. They are very fortunate. You see?" Nice instruction. So I'm going to give a few little memories from some God sisters. And as I'm working on a book at this point, along with Kashori and Bishaka, interviewing their interviews of ladies who are initiated by Srila Prabhupada. So I'm not, I have permission for the book, but I don't really have permission to speak publicly, and I want to honor that. So I'm not going to give the names of the persons unless I know that what they have, have said has already been made public. But I'm going to tell their story, their little memory, because it's very, very wonderful memories and reflections and lessons here. So this one devotee met Srila Prabhupada in Chicago. And the first time she met him, she had newly come, she had a little boy. And, sometimes things are just like bewildering when you come just off the street. So the second time, she was a little bit more prepared. And she mentioned how when he came that second time, he looked more serious. And he was kind of revealing a more somber look, a more sober side of him. Somber means grave side of himself. And she said, "I can remember when he was leaving Chicago, he was looking back and he was waving at everybody. And I desperately," this is a girl speaking then, "I desperately wanted him to look at me, so I was waving. And my little baby," her little child's name was Shamsundar, "was on my back." So she was there waving like this. She showed me this in the interview. She was like waving like this. Prabhupada was standing and he was, gracefully waving. So she was thinking, "Prabhupada, just look at me. Prabhupada, just look at me." And she said, "It just seemed like he was looking at everyone else." And then I started to think, "Well, why would he look at me anyway? I'm just nobody. I just clean the bathrooms. There's all these pujaris and these big Sankirtan devotees, like the Radha Damodar bus party was there. And why would he look at me anyway?" And she said, because she had a little child, it was, she said, "I couldn't do these big services, but I could clean," so that was her wonderful, glorious service. So she said, "As soon as I started thinking, why would he look at you with all these other devotees, at that very instant, Srila Prabhupada looked at me." And she relates, "At that very instant, I thought, why would he look at me? He looked at me." And she said, it was like Srila Prabhupada could hear me. And I remember locking eyes with Srila Prabhupada. And then I began to shimmer. She said, me, spirit soul, I began to shimmer. This is the only way I can describe it. It was a brilliantly lit situation. I was shimmering. And with that glance from Srila Prabhupada, tears burst out of my eyes. I experienced a love of such intensity that I could hardly bear it. I'd never felt that much love from anyone, not even my own mother. I'd never experienced someone loving me that much. I felt Srila Prabhupada loved me so much that I could not even keep his glance, so I had to look away. So as I did, I remember I was crying and I was walking away and I was saying, Prabhupada loves me, he loves me. He doesn't even know me, but he loves me. And she said, this was my experience with Srila Prabhupada. And she's still serving him today. Another wonderful God sister actually met Srila Prabhupada during the early days of New York. She actually saw him chanting in Tompkins Square Park in 1966. She went there and she sat down and chanted. Then she just got up, yeah, this isn't for me. But then, in April of 69, somehow she connected again. And this time it was different, and it was for her. So now in April of 69, she went with all of the devotees from Boston to New York to meet Srila Prabhupada at the airport. And she was remembering when she made her obeisances, she was staying down for, sometimes we didn't know how long we should, in the beginning of like, how long should I stay down there? Keep my head down. So she had her head down for quite a while. And then when she said, when I peeked up, Srila Prabhupada was standing right by me and he patted me on the head. I was so blissful. She said, I had a fairly loving family when I was growing up, but at that moment I thought, I haven't known love until now. So Prabhupada's love just eclipsed that loving family that she had experienced. So then, she said, after that, all of the ladies that were present, and she named them, Leela Shukra, Kanchanbali, Indra, Rukmini, and me, walked alongside Srila Prabhupada, and we stood in front of him chanting when he sat down to speak. And then she goes, I once wrote to Srila Prabhupada asking if it was all right for me to do deity worship while other devotees took care of Aniruddha. Some of you will know who this is now. Aniruddha was her son. He wrote back, I'm simply surprised that you want to give up your child to some other persons, even they are also devotees. For you, child worship is more important than deity worship. If you cannot spend time with him, then stop the duties of Pujari. At least you must take good care of your son until he is 4 years old, and if after that time you are unable anymore to take care of him, then I shall take care of him. Imagine that. These children are given to us by Krishna. They're Vaishnavas, and we must be very careful to protect them. These are not ordinary children. They are Vaikuntha children, and we are very fortunate we can give them a chance to advance further in Krishna consciousness. This is a very great responsibility. Do not neglect or become confused. Your duty is very clear. And she said, I immediately started taking care of Aniruddha again. And then the family moved to Los Angeles, and her husband was assisting Srila Prabhupada in the Sanskrit department, and he was also transcribing. So one time Srila Prabhupada called her to his room and she says, you're very speedy. Your husband's not as speedy as you. And then he called her again and he took out a bangle and he said, an Indian lady has given this to me. Had a bangle. It's solid gold. I'd like you to have it. because you're working so hard on my books. So he gave this. She said, I was tongue-tied, but I said, thank you, Srila Prabhupada. She said, I still have that bangle. So in Los Angeles, Aniruddha was imitating the children dancing Bengali style. The devotees would, by this time, some devotees had come to India and we'd like learned a new style of dance. So Srila Prabhupada said, he's imitating the others, and in a child, imitation is a sign of intelligence. So then Shruti Kirti said, he is intelligent just like his father. Srila Prabhupada said, no, he is intelligent like his mother. His mother is more intelligent. So it's another God sister writes, my first impression was overwhelming. Here was a personality who scared me due to his unknown power. I'd never experienced anything like it, and I knew it wasn't from this world. I could almost sense that if I became involved with him, he was going to tie me up for the rest of my life, and my whole life would change. I was just 17 years old, and I knew nothing, but I could feel this was a total clash of worlds. I had to either run away or forever try to figure it out. I didn't have a one-on-one personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada, but by observing him, I formed a loving spiritual bond with him. That relationship isn't explainable in a mundane sense because it's not from this world. It's based on service. We only love Krishna if we do some service for him. And as soon as we engage in giving that service exchange, our relationship develops. Similarly, when we engage in Srila Prabhupada's service, our love for him develops. That was the strongest love we ever felt. It overwhelmed us. When I went to Bombay and saw Srila Prabhupada relaxed in his natural element, my love for him increased. Once during a darshan, Srila Prabhupada saw my discomfort when the setting sun, means they were up on the roof, when the setting sun was straight in my eyes. He said, come and sit here, and indicated that I should sit right next to him. I was insignificant, yet my spiritual master said, come and sit with me. Once, after class in Mayapur, Srila Prabhupada was walking from his Vyasa sign towards Radha Madhava, while Bishaka was taking photographs. Srila Prabhupada began plucking flowers out of his garland and throwing them at Bishaka. These weren't ordinary flowers. She was being hit by waves of transcendental energy. If you look at this from a mundane perspective, it wasn't anything. But if you look at what was actually happening, it was complete ecstasy. Because Srila Prabhupada loved everyone, everyone loved him. His love was spiritual, and the soul responded to it. To come into the presence of such a personality is a rare and mind-boggling experience. If a person has a strong desire, he or she will be led to a real Vaishnav. The higher the quality of the Vaishnav, the more the creeper of devotion is nourished. Another devotee. Srila Prabhupada was a great personality, but he was humble and simple, and that attracted me. I wasn't qualified, but by Prabhupada's mercy, he accepted me as his disciple. Just as Vasudeva and I were attracted to Prabhupada, so Prabhupada's books and lectures attract people coming today. And everything that he established, deity worship, kirtans, tulsi puja, temple service, is also attractive. Just seeing devotees engaged in Krishna's service is attractive. And this is something that I've heard time and time again from God's sisters, that they'd come to the temple and they'd see the devotees so energetically involved in doing so many different things, or they'd see the Harinam party. And to see that energy going out was very attractive. The other night I chanted Gayatri in Srila Prabhupada's Samadhi. And when I came out of the Samadhi, there was so many, it was in the evening, so many people were, you know, packed around the place. But on the steps of the Samadhi, there was so many devotees kind of sitting very casually, eating pizza and drinking sodas and chatting. And I was thinking, it's good they're in Vrindavan, but I don't think this would exactly be that pleasing to Srila Prabhupada, just being so casual, you know, sitting around. And I was remembering how this particular person, how she was commenting on how attractive it is to see devotees performing service. And then I happened to read something from Srila Prabhupada, and he was talking exactly about this, but in such a very forceful way, about working hard for Krishna. So at the end of the day, you're so tired that you just fall asleep, you know. Before your head hits the pillow. Anyway, one other devotee remembers, from day one, Amarendra, our temple president, had drilled me, your relationship with Srila Prabhupada is book distribution. The way to please him is by distributing his books. I was a book distributor, and since my association was with Srila Prabhupada was through his books, when he left the planet, my reaction was different from many of my god brothers and god sisters. For me, Srila Prabhupada's books were still there, so he was also still there. The physical separation wasn't traumatic. Srila Prabhupada is also in the heart of the wonderful daughters who helped take care of me and raise me, and by their mercy, I'm still here. So taking care of devotees when they come is a very important service. Because, you know, when people enter, when they first come through the door, you know, they don't know anything, and it can be kind of an overwhelming experience. If nobody reaches out and welcomes them and makes them feel at home, they could also go back out the door without ever making the connection, you know. This is another god sister. After several years, my husband was clearly ready for initiation, and I clearly was not. I still haven't even so much as uttered Hare Krishna. A dear friend suggested that my husband and I meet Srila Prabhupada in New York City on July 4th, 1974. I was intimidated to meet him and didn't know what I would say or even where I should go. But together my husband and I walked into Srila Prabhupada's beautiful, long, narrow room. He was seated at a table at the head of the room, my husband in the middle and I at the opposite end, feeling terrified. I wanted to blend into the wall. Srila Prabhupada was golden. He looked right at me in perfect English. He said, "So you are interested in Krishna consciousness?" But I couldn't understand a word. And he said, and I was embarrassed. And Srila Prabhupada, knowing precisely what was going on, said to my husband, "You translate." It didn't matter to Srila Prabhupada that I didn't understand, and right away I felt embraced by him. I didn't have to stand on ceremony or pretend. I could just be me, and it was okay. Prabhupada then asked me if I had any questions, and then a young woman came in with a large bowl of white round sweets that looked like golf balls in water. Srila Prabhupada thanked her and called me over. He said, "Hold out your hand." I held out my left hand, and he said, "No, no, the other hand." He wasn't condescending, he was loving. I held out my right hand, and he put a wet, drippy golf ball-looking thing into it. I had no idea what to do with it. He saw my bewilderment, And he motioned to me with a wide open mouth, as if to say, put it in your mouth. I thought, how am I going to get this into my mouth? But somehow I squished it in. My eyes must have bugged out because Prabhupada burst out laughing. I washed my hands and sat down and I thought, this is a magical experience. This person has made Krishna consciousness real and available for me. I couldn't concentrate on what he was saying because all I was thinking was, how am I going to thank this person? Then somebody came in and said, Srila Prabhupada, it's time to go to the airport. My husband was a driver, so he went out of the room, and I was standing in the doorway, and I was about to walk out when I turned, and I folded my hands, and I said to Srila Prabhupada, thank you very much. And without a moment's hesitation, Srila Prabhupada said back to her, Hare Krishna. And for the first time, I finally said, Hare Krishna. It was a magical, life-changing experience. I had felt like a square peg in a round hole. I didn't fit. I was misunderstood. But when I met Srila Prabhupada, everything changed. He was loving and welcoming, fatherly, everything I was looking for. I became good friends with phenomenal, like-minded devotees who understood me. Yadubar being foremost among them. He acknowledged me and said, yes, there's a place for you, and he showed me where and how. And by Srila Prabhupada's and Krishna's grace, I'm still here. And she definitely is, serving devotees wonderfully. Okay. This is a good one. This girl was living in Augusta, Georgia, and she just had a baby. She was married, she had a baby, and she was thinking, oh God, there's got to be more to life. There's got to be some truth. What is it? What is it? And she just suddenly became overwhelmed that, like, I have to find the truth and I have to find it now. So she got a list of organizations, and the Hare Krishna was one of them. And there was a Maharishi Yogi and some other something, you know, like four or five. And they were based in Atlanta. It's like about 3 hours from Augusta. So she got her mother to take care of the baby, and she and her husband were going off for a weekend of finding the truth in a weekend. So for some reason, she looks at the list, she goes, well, let's go to the Hare Krishna's first, you know, at least they have an address. Well, and they went to the address, and the temple had shifted, and nobody had, like, put up a sign. So they were standing there like, okay, now, well, what do we do next? And some guy comes along, and he goes, hey, do you know where these people went? They just asked this random person. They said, well, I think they went that way. They started walking, and lo and behold, they heard some ching, 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 and they found the temple. She went in, and the minute she went in the temple, that was it. She said, we don't need to go anywhere else. And in fact, she didn't even want to go back to Augusta to get her kid. So her husband and the temple president went back, and she stayed in the temple. And the devotees were saying, Srila Prabhupada's coming in 3 days, so we got to get ready. So, you know, the Prabhupada's coming has, like, always been, like, good stories, you know, a lot of energy going out. So that they were staying up, you know, getting the Vyasa sign ready, repainting the walls, sewing, and she said, I was learning everything that I could. And they were telling me, you need to offer your obeisance to Srila Prabhupada when he comes. And I said, yes, but what are the prayers? And they were saying, well, we don't have time to teach you right now. Just, you know, put your head down and say Hare Krishna. We'll teach you later. You know, we just got to get ready right now. So at the airport, she was saying, I wanted to say the prayers that everybody else was saying, but I didn't know them. So when Prabhupada came, I put my head on the floor. And she goes, and this has never happened before. But some kind of force came through my brain, through my mouth. My mouth started opening and closing, and I was saying, Mama, Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasaya. I had no idea what I was saying, but I felt beautiful and wonderful, and chills were running all through my body. I glanced up, and Srila Prabhupada was looking in my direction. That was my first connection. Later on, I had to learn the prayers word for word because I really didn't know them. I realized Krishna talks to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada does absolutely nothing without Lord Krishna's sanction. But all of Prabhupada's books come directly from Krishna, and they contain Krishna's words. When Srila Prabhupada reads his own books, he would become ecstatic because he was reading Krishna's words. He never thought these books were his. Which had nice realizations. Since 1975, in my heart, all I've wanted to know is what Srila Prabhupada wants me to do and how to do it and try to remember Krishna. But throughout the years, I was falling down in different ways and feeling very bad. Then, during one of Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day ceremonies, I was feeling that I had abandoned Srila Prabhupada and that I was so fallen I couldn't get his mercy again. Suddenly, someone threw one of Srila Prabhupada's garlands at me and it hit me right in the face like a bullet. I began crying and crying and crying. I still have that garland and I realized at that moment Srila Prabhupada's mercy is always there and all I have to do is pick myself up and keep going. My conclusion is we should simply chant Hare Krishna, follow the principles, do some service, and delve deeper into Srila Prabhupada's books. If we can do that, Srila Prabhupada will be there for us. As long as we're trying, Srila Prabhupada is there. Another god sister. She had joined the temple. She was an educated from a very educated family. She was educated. She joined in New York in 1970 in the summer. And then from there she was sent to another temple in Columbus, Ohio, and then to Denver. And it just by some strange occurrence, it said every temple she joined there was some kind of catastrophe happening. You know, like, so she went back to where she came from, which was Florida, and then she wrote a letter to Prabhupada, and she said, what is the condition of someone like me who likes Krishna consciousness, but I find I can't live in the temple with the devotees? So she sent this letter, and she's waiting and waiting for an answer. So 1 month went by, because, you know, no internet in those days. So 1 month, 2 months went by, 3 months, she decided, never mind, I'm going to try again. So in the fall of 71, she's begun to hitchhike to Tallahassee, Florida. And she was with a friend, and her friend said, let's stop by that house where we used to receive our mail. So they went to that house, opened the mailbox, and there was a tiny blue envelope from India, from Srila Prabhupada. And it was a one-page handwritten letter. And he wrote, in order to become successful in Krishna consciousness, three things are necessary. Does everybody want to know what those three things are? You must have enthusiasm. You must be determined. And you must be patient. If any one of these is missing, you will find the process difficult. So please learn to be patient. Prabhupada knew my problem, and his letter was my saving grace. From then on, every time I've had trouble, I'd look at that letter, and I'd see where I was lacking. My biggest mistake was becoming too dogmatic and being unable to see the person behind the Supreme Lord's instructions. I thought that Srila Prabhupada was a visual incarnation of those instructions, not an actual person. In 1973, I came to a point that I had to see who Srila Prabhupada was. Otherwise, my faith and commitment in the process of Krishna consciousness couldn't continue. I went to India, and as soon as I sat down in front of Srila Prabhupada, my life changed. I saw an incredible, compassionate, loving, humorous, knowledgeable, regulated, convincing, and faithful person. In 1 second, his personal qualities finished all the disruption and dogmatism that had created havoc in my life. Oh. Another devotee remembers, in 1974, I went with a friend of mine to San Francisco Rath Yatra. It was a dark, gloomy, cold, rainy, overcast, freezing, miserable day. Everyone was bundled up. But when Srila Prabhupada got on the stage, he put his arms in the air and he started to dance, and the clouds separated and it became sunny. In my heart, Krishna made me realize that Srila Prabhupada was a special personality. We have, I mean, certain things are consistent, you know, like, I'm giving singular examples, but there's multiple examples, you know, the same one. I was in London, and same thing, we finally got Prabhupada there for Rath Yatra. And it was just that miserable, typical, cloudy, foggy, damp London day. And it didn't look like relief was anywhere going to happen. Prabhupada was bundled up in that famous, you've seen him in that check coat, you know, with his hat on. And he came, and the police were trying to, like, hurry things along, and we were trying to slow down the start, hoping that the weather would change. And finally it was like we had to get going or they were going to cancel the parade. And we were waiting for Srila Prabhupada to get on the cart. And he had made obeisances to the deities. And then he looked up and raised his arms and he began to dance and chant in front of the deities. And at that same instant, the sun came out. And Prabhupada was dancing, and now the sun was out, and he had that big coat on. So he was like, he didn't stop dancing, but he took off the coat. And everybody else around him, all the men were like in such ecstasy, they were not noticing that Srila Prabhupada had taken his coat off. So I came up and put out my arms, and he put his coat in my arms, and then I was in ecstasy to be able to carry this coat throughout the Rath Yatra festival. In fact, when we got to Trafalgar Square, there was this, for some reason, there was some pieces of wood to make like a pathway over to where his Vyasa sign had been erected. And it didn't look very secure, these planks of wood. So again, he, you know, the kirtan's going, everybody's Hari bowling, and Prabhupada's looking at this pathway that he's supposed to walk. And I could see also, it, you know, his hesitation. So then I got the coat on my right arm and I put out my left arm, and he took my left arm with his right arm, and then we walked over to the Vyasa sign. Anyway, so this is a very wonderful god sister, but very amazingly, well, the story will tell you. During airport Sankirtan, I would constantly daydream about Srila Prabhupada arriving and coming to the temple. I'd imagine seeing my spiritual master. But when Srila Prabhupada physically left the planet in 1977, I had never personally seen him. Sometime later, Srila Prabhupada allowed me to dream about him so visibly, so vividly, that I fell to the floor and wept. The dream was so real that I knew Srila Prabhupada was personally fulfilling my deep desire to have his personal darshan. He has helped me in so many ways of my life. He gave me a husband who has guided me, kept me on track, and given me a wonderful daughter who's my best friend. I'm grateful for all the other devotees Srila Prabhupada has given us to associate with and help us, and I hope I can be helpful to them. I am happy to be involved in the family business of preaching and giving Krishna wherever we go. I can't imagine life without feeling Srila Prabhupada's presence at every moment. Yeah. Not everybody actually saw Srila Prabhupada, who became his disciple. Another god sister of mine told me how she had left college and joined the temple. And at a certain point, she started having some doubts and some apprehensions about her decision. to do that. And she started thinking, maybe I should go back out and, you know, experience a little more out there and, you know, see if this is really what I want to do. And so she thought, yeah, that's a good plan. And she hadn't told the temple president, but she was going to tell him that very day when a letter from Srila Prabhupada came. And it was addressed to the temple president. But in those days, if you got a letter from Prabhupada, you just read it to everybody. You'd call everybody, letter from Prabhupada, letter from Prabhupada. And everybody would gather around and you'd read the letter. So everybody gathered around and he read the letter that was addressed to him. But as he was reading that letter, she said every one of her doubts was automatic, was just smashed away. And by the end of the letter, she was fully committed to remain, and she's never left. And she never once saw him personally. During somehow or other, it didn't happen, but she's firmly committed. Another one. Toward the end of 1975, after reading Srila Prabhupada's books, my husband and I moved into the temple, where everyone and everything was revolving around Srila Prabhupada. Everyone spoke about him and was conscious of him. By serving, following the regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds, and going to the program, I became more and more attracted to Srila Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada visited Melbourne in 76, we heard his morning Bhagavatam class and attended his evening darshans. But what cemented my relationship with Srila Prabhupada occurred after his departure. I was wondering, what's going to happen now? And Srila Prabhupada came to me and said, don't think that I have gone. That was a turning point in my life. I realized, of course he's not gone, he's with us. And I felt much closer to him than ever before. Just those five words, don't think that I have gone, coming from Srila Prabhupada's mouth, cemented my relationship with him, and I've never thought of doing anything else with my life but serving him. Another one. I'd make sandalwood paste with saffron and camphor for Srila Prabhupada's forehead. I'd make his garland, clean his room, cook breakfast for the devotees. One morning, I missed the class and was walking across the courtyard when Srila Prabhupada came out of the temple, surrounded by an entourage of men. Spontaneously, I fell flat, offering dandavats, because we all offered dandavats to Srila Prabhupada in those days. And, anyways, there's actually photographs. We can prove this if some people don't believe it, but it actually happened. We offered dandavats to Srila Prabhupada. So she offered dandavats, and she touched his feet. Srila Prabhupada didn't say anything to me, but a brahmachari severely chastised me for touching Srila Prabhupada's feet. I thought I must have committed a terrible offense, and I felt dreadful, but later all the devotees told me, the lady devotees told her, you're so fortunate, you're so fortunate. Remembering Srila Prabhupada is what keeps me going today. There are times when I'm so down and I think, is Krishna really real? Then I think of Srila Prabhupada, his dedication and devotion, and I know that Krishna consciousness is real because Srila Prabhupada was the living example of it, and my conviction returns. Another god sister, she recalls, just by touching my books, just by looking at them, just by reading even one word, a person will be benefited. So she was remembering that in her heart, she knew there had to be more to life than the endless cycle of working and going out with friends and getting intoxicated and trying to be happy. She was actually praying, my Lord, there has to be more than this. And she got a job in managing a sweet, like a candy shop. And one day, this devotee, a bhakta, his name was Bhakta Tony, came into the shop and somehow they became friends. So after about a month, she said to him, you know, I feel like I'm supposed to be learning something, but I just don't know what it is. And that's when he gave her the Krishna book. up until that time, he hadn't actually discussed Krishna with her. So she took this Krishna book home and she started reading it. And she just went, opened the book. I saw the picture of Srila Prabhupada. And I thought, he was the most beautiful man I'd ever seen. I couldn't stop looking at him. And for the first time in my life, I actually fell in love. When I read this book, I was so attracted and fascinated, I couldn't put it down. I kept it with me wherever I went. Another devotee. I was determined to see Srila Prabhupada. What had happened, the first time she went with all the devotees to see Srila Prabhupada, she got elected to be the childminder. That means she watched all the children and all the other brothers went to see Srila Prabhupada. And so the second time, this time, she was determined. And she felt bad about it, actually. You know, like, you know, she didn't even get to see him or hear one lecture. So she said, this time I was determined to see him. She and she saw him. He was coming along the sidewalk surrounded by the young sannyasis. And she said their mood seemed to say, you know, stay away from our Srila Prabhupada. And she said, I was thinking, no, he's my Srila Prabhupada. A loud kirtan was going on. But as soon as he came close, I piped up and I said, Jai Srila Prabhupada! And he stopped and he turned his whole body around and he looked at me. And he said, Jai. The sannyasis were shocked. But I appreciated him stopping for me, a nobody. And I felt a deep, lasting connection with him. Then in Chicago, I came back from Sankirtan. I put down my book bag and I went into the temple. I paid my obeisances. And suddenly the mantra opened up. Every word was beautiful, spiritual, eternal. There was a floating sensation. I felt timeless. I didn't even know where I was. I didn't want the mantra to end, but when it did end, I thought, thank you, Srila Prabhupada, that was so nice. But what happened? A few moments later, I learned that Srila Prabhupada had left his body. I felt I had received his divine mercy. For a few minutes, he had taken the time to come to me and let me be with him. Yeah. Another devotee. After Srila Prabhupada's departure, I went on with my service, feeling that Prabhupada was still there. Each time I had a problem, I shared it with Srila Prabhupada, and he encouraged me. Each time things became too difficult, Srila Prabhupada made the arrangement so I could continue. He took care of me, and for this I'm eternally grateful. As a Christian, I was preparing to go to the heavenly planets. But Srila Prabhupada hijacked my trip, giving me the greatest treasure of transcendental knowledge through his books, his strong disciples, and his seva, Devi Seva and Sankirtan. He transcendentalized my life, and now I'm safe, whatever happens. If I just keep following his instructions, Srila Prabhupada will be there for me. I don't have to worry about anything. I can concentrate on sharing Krishna consciousness with others. And Prabhupada will take care of the rest. She's still an active preacher. And this was a god sister who joined. She was a little bit older when she joined than most of us, like maybe 28, 29. So then she already had a child. So, but she and her son were both initiated. And then they went to New Vrindavan. But the in-charge there, Hayagriva, said he didn't want her to stay there. And so Prabhupada was there. And he says, Srila Prabhupada, does she have to stay? Srila Prabhupada said, you can tell a tree by the fruit it produces. Her son is chanting. She is chanting. What's the problem? They're both chanting. The women slept in the temple room, and at about 2 a.m., I'd wake up to the transcendental sound of Srila Prabhupada chanting japa that came floating down the stairs. My mind bathed in his chanting, and all my anxieties and maya and karma were washed away. Every morning, Srila Prabhupada would come from Mangala Arati and stand in front of the deities in the dim light. This was at old Vrindavan at the old farmhouse. Once I asked Srila Prabhupada, what is my service? He said, your service is your son. See that he never takes birth again in another womb. Once my son, Dwarkadish, was crying because a horse had passed stool on his little Jagannath deities in a box, and I didn't know what to do. So I asked Srila Prabhupada if we should clean the box with cow dung, goba. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, you just show Lord Jagannath the goba, and it will be clean. You don't have to actually rub it in with goba. No. When he was 12, Dwarkadish received first and second initiation from Srila Prabhupada. Actually, I met him a couple of years. Somehow I'd never met him, and I met him a couple of years ago. It's very nice. I mean, now he's like in his early 40s. A nice person. Once Srila Prabhupada saw me distributing books, and she became a very foremost book distributor. Once Srila Prabhupada saw me distributing books in Los Angeles, and he gave me a quick look that seemed to say, be careful, don't bother people too much, because she could be quite forceful. He was gentlemanly, and I immediately understood I should also behave nicely. I was happy to do my service, and didn't speak much with Srila Prabhupada, but I did write him a letter. He wrote back saying, telling that I was a devotee in my past life, that I should take care of myself, take care of Krishna, and I would always be happy. I know how much Srila Prabhupada wanted cow protection, and now I am protecting cows. She has a very wonderful goshala outside of Bombay. Beautiful place. Srila Prabhupada said, this rascal modern civilization based on cow killing and technology is doomed. And Maharaj Prickett stopped Kali from killing the cow, and now Krishna wants to see what we will do, how we will do it. So this, because it's getting late, so this will be maybe the last one. This is a very wonderful devotee. She and her husband were in school in Michigan, the big school in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And there was four members of the Hare Krishna movement that had been kind of temporarily ousted by Srila Prabhupada. He had sent them away. For some spiritual deviation. It was philosophical deviation, not mundane kind. So she's with her husband. They hear this ching, 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 ching. And they just like started following that sound. And they came upon Vishnujanan, Gargamuni, Subal, and Brahmananda. So Vishnujanan immediately saw them and said, I want to tell you about our spiritual master. And just by hearing this Vishnujan speak, she felt she had already met Srila Prabhupada. So, but when she first saw him, it was at the Detroit airport, and she said it was as though the spiritual world had descended. The airport became Goloka. Srila Prabhupada was beautifully golden and regal, and every aspect of him emanated the spiritual world. So then she remembers how I was in the kitchen of Srila Prabhupada's house. I was feeling intimidated, so I was hiding. But somebody called, bring water for Srila Prabhupada. Nobody else was around, so I brought the water, and I offered my obeisances, and I ran back to the kitchen. Then I heard, bring fruit for Srila Prabhupada. So I cut up some fruit, and I ran in. I handed the fruit over and I was going backing out when Srila Prabhupada said, "Sit down." I was nervous and overwhelmed by his presence, but I sat down. Srila Prabhupada was distributing the fruit and everyone was taking a little. Srila Prabhupada said, "When doing business and taking prasadam, one must never be shy." I have faithfully followed that instruction. When Prabhupada was on his way to New Vrindavan to give the Bhagavad Dharma discourses, I made a garland of yellow roses for him, and I was praying, "I hope Srila Prabhupada likes this garland." He wore it that day and the next morning as well. Srila Prabhupada reciprocated, even when our desires were self-centered and foolish. When Srila Prabhupada spoke in New Vrindavan, I felt nothing could be better than sitting in that beautiful place. It was on the top of a hill, and there was a beautiful big old trees that are somehow or other still there to this day. So the devotees had constructed some kind of pondal type of arrangement. But it was basically outdoor setting. And so she said, "I felt nothing could be more better than sitting in that beautiful place with Srila Prabhupada and seeing Radha and Krishna." Radha Vrindavan Chandra were also there. A sense of peace and happiness that I'd never experienced before filled me. Life was perfect. And then Srila Prabhupada said, "This material world is a hard struggle for existence. But when this is over and you are back to Godhead, then life will be sublime." And I was thinking, "Prabhupada, I'm so happy right now." Srila Prabhupada's presence fulfilled our every desire for safety and security and love. I had no clue about the struggles in material life. Even though it was crazy preparing for his visits and trying to make everything wonderful for him, every time Srila Prabhupada would come to Paris, I got a sense of the spiritual world. She and her husband moved around a bit. I felt deep joy and peace, safety and security and affection. When Srila Prabhupada installed Radha Parasishwara, somebody had painted over a small dark spot on the marble on Radharani's cheek. During the bathing ceremony, the oils removed some of the paint, and Srila Prabhupada was rubbing her cheek with his finger. And I've heard this story from several devotees, how he's just rubbing Radharani's cheek with his finger and just looking at her very lovingly. My heart began beating fast, and I thought, "Oh gosh, is Prabhupada upset?" He rubbed off all the paint, and we dressed the deities in all their finery. They looked beautiful. Srila Prabhupada sat on the Vyasa sign and said, "The women of Kashmir have the most beautiful bodies, and the women of Paris have the most beautiful faces. Krishna has come to Paris to collect his Parisian gopi. She's the most beautiful." I took that lesson deeply. I realized Srila Prabhupada's eyes were anointed with love of God, and he saw Krishna and Radha as they really were. We didn't have the eyes to see them yet. There's a picture of Prabhupada standing with folded hands looking at Radha Parasishwara. When he first saw that photograph, his eyes got very big, and he said, "Ah, the photographer has caught me at a very intimate moment. I am looking at Krishna, and Krishna is looking at me." Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So I just wanted to share one further thing. Because, you know, we hear all this Prabhupada. I read earlier how Prabhupada said, just because in the scriptures it, you know, may say certain things about women being bondage, that we shouldn't use that to become agitated against women and treat the women as inferior. And I read this beautiful purport, and it's quite amazing, because in this purport, he's telling that anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious, in motherly affection or parental affection, should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yasoda. So So here's the verse. It's dressed in saffron yellow sari, with a belt tied about her full hips. Mother Yasoda pulled on the turning ropes, laboring considerably. Her bangles and earrings were moving and vibrating, and her whole body shaking. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face, with its very beautiful eyebrows, were wet with perspiration, and novelty flowers were falling from her hair. So Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious in motherly affection or parental affection should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yasoda. It's not that one should desire to become like Yasoda, for this is Mayavad. Either in parental affection or conjugal love, friendship or servitorship, in any way, we must follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, not try to become like them. Follow in the footsteps. Therefore, this description is provided here. Advanced devotees must cherish this description, always thinking of Mother Yasoda's features, how she was dressed, how she was working and perspiring, how beautifully the flowers were arranged in her hair, and so on. One should take advantage of the full description provided here by thinking of Mother Yasoda and maternal affection for Krishna. So as we offer our little deeps to Yasoda Mayi and Damodar, we can remember this beautiful description of Mother Yasoda. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you very much for sharing a preview of your book. And I hope it comes out soon.
So do I.
Before we all leave.
Please pray. Give blessings that this will happen. I think it's urgently needed. Hare Krishna.